Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes, offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, a private nonprofit conservation organization working on behalf of Florida's fish, wildlife, and their habitats, as well as outdoor education and sustainable nature-based recreation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, since 1936, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Gun reform causing shootouts within the political parties debating the issue in the Florida legislature.
Can we put the blinders on and put the partisan politics aside and let's just be Team Florida for once? I really could care less which groups don't like my vote today or tomorrow or the next week.
Also tonight, a bill to curb opioid abuse has passed the House, but some doctors think it may not be the best remedy.
So essentially what we end up having is a quagmire.
We'll also get the latest effort by the legislature to bring the state's death penalty rules into compliance with a court order and chat with one of Florida's 28 college presidents about what this year's session may mean for schools like his. 1 week and 1 day left to go in this year's lawmaking session in Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. With just over a week left in the 2018 legislative session, lawmakers are facing increasing pressure to pass gun safety legislation in response to the mass school shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Broward County. But as Sasha Cordner reports, the process is pitting folks within the same parties against one another.
In the last week or so, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have clashed over what they'd like to see in the gun safety proposals. It includes things like a ban on bump stocks and raising the minimum age to 21 for a person to buy any firearm. It's provisions like that that caused Jacksonville Republican Representative Jay Fant to try and strip gun control language from the House bill. He says the bill infringes on Floridians' Second Amendment rights.
This level of infringement upon our most sacred and highest regarded law is tremendously out of place in a package which contains many practical approaches to defending students. I have an oath to defend this Constitution, and I bring this amendment to you so that we do not get bogged down in a constitutional discussion, debate, argument, what have you. Instead, focus on the more positive pieces of the legislation proposed.
But his amendment failed. Meanwhile, both the House and Senate bills include a plan that could allow designated teachers to carry firearms if they are deputized and complete law enforcement training. Incoming House Speaker Jose Oliva says it's part of a school martial program.
It is the final line of defense. When everything else we should have in place as a society has failed, as it did in this case. Those coaches, those teachers who threw themselves in the line of fire, if they could have had a way to defend themselves and their students, I think that they would have wanted that. And so it is really just the last line of defense.
And we hopefully will be the first state once, if we can launch this Marshall program, we'll be the first state to do so, and I think it's a game changer, and it'll be only a matter of time before the other 49 states adopt our policies.
That's current House Speaker Richard Corcoran. He says he recently spoke to Parkland shooting survivors about what he calls the benefits of the school martial program.
I think what I said to the kids is, here's what they all have in common. All of these shooters are just abject, complete, and utter cowards. Here's what a coward doesn't want to do, stare down a marshal with a gun, and the second he goes through a door. I think it changes behavior tremendously.
Corcoran says top House Republicans have also been working with Democrats like Jared Moskowitz of Coral Springs, Kristen Jacobs of Coconut Creek, and Katie Edwards Walpole of Plantation. As for Representative Edwards Walpole, she says it's time for all sides to put aside their differences and come together on this issue.
So I appreciate the inclusion from the majority. I thank you for working and continuing to work with all of the members, and especially the minority members, to incorporate our concerns and our suggestions. And I would just ask that going forward that those individuals who can't get with it and be a part of this bipartisan compromise and work towards a solution, get the hell out of the way.
But the Black Legislative Caucus has said the gun safety bill in its current form is not something they can get behind because of the arming teachers provision. Some talked about what this legislation could do to minority students, such as State Representative Camilla Brown.
While a vast majority of our teachers are wonderful people, there could be situations where guns are actually used against minority students because a teacher says that he or she fears for her life and the safety of others. In this bill, there is no exception to the already law, Stand Your Ground, included. Teachers authorized to carry up under this Marshall Program will be able to stand their ground when they are threatened by any student, not just an active shooter, and avoid all civil and criminal liability.
Meanwhile, on Thursday, Governor Rick Scott spoke on the floor to House and Senate lawmakers about the importance of passing gun reform in the 2018 legislative session.
As we all know, two weeks ago, Florida changed. 17 people in our state that didn't deserve to die died. It's horrible that this could ever happen anywhere. And when you talk to the families, you just can't imagine what they're going through.
He later introduced Ryan Petty and his son Patrick, one of the 17 families who lost a loved one in the high school shooting, his 14-year-old daughter, Alana.
No parent should have to feel the way that my wife and I feel right now and the other 16 victim families. We have an opportunity. This time must be different. We have an opportunity to make some changes that will protect our kids in their schools and make them feel safe and make our schools safe.
Petty says he wants lawmakers to put politics aside and pass Governor Rick Scott's proposal. It does include some differences from the House and Senate bills, like not arming teachers. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
While some of the priorities announced by Florida lawmakers at the start of the legislative session have taken a backseat to efforts to respond to the Parkland school shooting, Regan McCarthy reports a measure to help curb the state's opioid epidemic has moved forward in the House.
An average of 14 people die every day from opioid-related abuse. That's according to Stewart Republican Representative Gail Harrell.
Years ago, we really looked at the PDMP, and I was one of the original sponsors of the bill back in 2001 when it wasn't the thing to do in the state of Florida, and I'm so pleased to see the advances we have come in making the PDMP an integral part of the fight against this opioid crisis and substance abuse.
The measure moving through the legislature ensures doctors and pharmacies use the PDMP, or Prescription Drug Monitoring Program database, before prescribing or dispensing an opioid. It also allows Florida to share its information across state lines to help cut down on so-called doctor shopping. Bill sponsor, Bradenton Republican Representative Jim Boyd, says another provision limits the number of pills a doctor can prescribe.
This bill establishes controlled substance prescribing limits for acute pain 3 to 7 days if medically necessary.
But that part of the bill causes some concern for Venice Republican Representative Julio Gonzalez.
I just want to take a couple moments to raise attention to one final little provision on the bill that I think we need to improve.
Gonzalez says the initial proposal to limit the number of pills a doctor could prescribe was far too stringent. Now, Gonzalez says it's better, but as a surgeon, he can see one problem.
If you have major surgery, the way this bill is written, you're allowed to prescribe 3 tablets
And then if you document something on the chart about the medical necessity, which of course is always the case after major surgery, you can actually extend that to 7. And that's great. But what would be better, members, as the only person in this room who performs major surgery, if I could tell you what would be better, is it would be to extend that to 10 days.
Gonzalez says the reason for that is doctors routinely ask their patients to return in 10 days for a wound check. Keeping the measure as it is, he says, would have patients who've just gone through serious surgery going back and forth multiple times to see a doctor.
Nobody can argue that at 7 days you're going to be able to consistently be able to take out the stitches at 7 days. So essentially what we end up having is a quagmire. We have a situation where the patient has to come back at 7 days to get more pain medicine, and then from there go to the pharmacy to actually pick up the pain medicine after they have had major surgery, only to come back 3 days later to see the doctor again anyway.
But Boyd pushed back against Gonzalez. He says while he's not a doctor, he has learned a lot by spending time talking with people about their experiences.
A gentleman in my office had hip surgery, had hip replacement. He was otherwise a healthy guy, 60 years old, but had a full hip replacement. He walked out of the surgery center that afternoon with a walker, got in his car, and his follow-up visit for major hip surgery was 4 days later. Now, I don't know if that's routine, but that's what his follow-up visit was.
The measure passed unanimously on the House floor. A similar bill is awaiting a hearing on the Senate floor. And Gonzalez says he's hoping that chamber might tweak the bill before passing it. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Meanwhile, addiction specialists and law enforcement officials are pleading with Florida House members to keep funding an injectable opioid addiction treatment. As we hear from Ryan Bank at member station WJCT in Jacksonville, the House's proposed budget zeroes out funding for Vivitrol, a drug that can block opioid receptors in the brain for up to 30 days.
As opioid overdose deaths continue in the Sunshine State, House members would like to cut $7 million in recurring funding for the anti-addiction drug. Vivitrol is used by jails to help the addicted stave off cravings in the month following their release, as well as by community treatment programs and the State Department of Children and Families. Though House and Senate leaders want to increase funding overall for opioid addiction treatment, Mark Fontaine with the Florida Alcohol and Drug Abuse Association says the program would be a profound loss.
This is an important tool in the toolbox, and we have every House member I've spoken to, I've asked them to take under consideration that this is a very valuable tool to helping us in our fight in the opioid epidemic.
Vivitrol isn't the only opioid receptor blocking drug available. An NPR ProPublica investigation found Vivitrol's maker has aggressively lobbied state legislatures, including Florida's, and fought for programs that excluded its competitors. Morphine and buprenorphine are similar drugs, but they themselves are less potent opioids, and they're available to be administered by the patient, making it easier for them to abuse. An injectable, slow-release version of buprenorphine received preliminary approval by the Food and Drug Administration last year, and some experts say it's more effective than Vivitrol. Fontaine says the state should have an all-of-the-above strategy.
All these medications are valuable and important.
A final decision will be made as lawmakers hammer out the state budget in the remaining week or so of session. I'm Ryan Bank in Jacksonville.
Still to come on Capitol Report, at least one chamber of the Florida legislature finally comes to grips with a court-ordered change to the way the state implements capital punishment.
It is a travesty in the state of Florida that we do not have the consistent standard across the board for the death penalty.
And supporters of this bill do not believe it will take away a woman's decision to abort a pregnancy.
It's very unfortunate that the House decided to take this bill up and put politics over health care, but we have seen this time and time again.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
On Wednesday of this week, a veteran Florida lawmaker remarked that things can move very slowly in Tallahassee when it comes to making things happen at the legislature. Florida senators have now teed up a change to the state's death penalty rules, which is now headed to the chamber floor. It comes 2 years after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling declaring the previous system unconstitutional. Lynn Hatter has that story.
When the nation's high court ruled Florida's death penalty scheme unconstitutional, it didn't quite upend the whole system. That's because the ruling applied to cases decided after 2002. But what about those convicted before that time?
Senate Bill 870 requires that a jury vote for a death sentence must be unanimous, and that this unanimity requirement is applied retroactively to all death penalty cases.
Democratic Senator Randolph Bracey's proposal would allow people convicted prior to 2002 to challenge their cases. Under the old system, all that was required to sentence someone to death was a simple majority. The new system requires a unanimous vote. And Bracey's proposal to extend the same considerations to people convicted before 2002 is supported by Republican Senator Jeff Brandis.
At the end of the day, the standard should be exactly the same no matter when the penalty was applied. And this bill seeks to rectify that. It is the right bill at the right time. We need to address this issue. It is a travesty in the state of Florida that we do not have a consistent standard across the board for the death penalty.
But there are caveats. According to the Florida Department of Corrections, there are presently 350 people on death row, and an unknown number of those are already entitled to review by the Florida Supreme Court. Bracey's proposal could open all cases to review. A staff analysis of the bill says if it becomes law, it's likely going to increase the court system's workload, placing more pressure on prosecutors, already understaffed public defenders, and appeals court counsel. And Republican Senator Rob Bradley worries making even more changes would likely cause log jams in the judiciary.
The Florida Supreme Court has given its stamp of approval, and we're allowed to move forward with carrying out justice in these various cases. My concern is that if we go tinkering again, open up the hood and tinkering again, that we will cause the delays that were of concern to many members before. The Florida Supreme Court has created stability, and I don't think we should disturb that.
Earlier this week, the Florida Supreme Court rejected 9 death penalty appeals because the person was convicted prior to 2002. The News Service of Florida reports at least 80 similar cases have been rejected since the 2016 U.S. Supreme Court ruling. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
On Capitol Report, the president of Tallahassee Community Colleges, one of only 2 colleges in Florida that retain the community moniker. And this is Jim Murtaugh. And Jim, welcome to Capitol Report. I know we're still in a state of flux as far as the legislative budgetary process is concerned. But from your viewpoint, what had you hoped to see going into this legislative session? And how so far is it playing out for you and the other 27 colleges around the state?
Well, Tom, as you recall, last year was a pretty awful year for Florida colleges. Hundreds of millions of dollars went into the university system, which, by the way, I celebrate. I think that's a really good move. But at the same time, the college system was cut $30 million, which makes no sense. It makes no sense for Floridians, makes no sense for businesses who want to hire our graduates. So going into this year, our hope was and is, as you said before we went on, hope springs eternal. Our hope is that before the session ends, that the legislature will see the value and the benefits of investing in the college system, because that investment, the things we're asking for, the faculty to teach, to provide the credentials for people to get jobs, the advisors who get students on the right path and keep them on the right path, and who help them align their interests with the needs of Florida's business community. Our hope is that the legislature will fund us so that we can continue to grow and meet the growing demand for our graduates. As you may know, Florida Chamber of Commerce issued its Florida 2030 report, and they've identified a number of jobs, the growth in jobs that Florida will be facing, and we are the talent supply for those businesses. So I'm very concerned that we may make it through this session once again with inadequate funding to help us move forward in meeting those needs.
Is there anything you think that can be done from a governance viewpoint? There had been some proposals which had been opposed by many presidents like yourself when it came to revamping the governance system of the state college system. But looking kind of blue sky, what would you and other presidents like to see as far as the autonomy and the ability to make a lot more of the decisions on your own?
Well, we are regarded in Florida as the top college system in America. Let's start with that. So you have to ask the question, Tom, what are you trying to fix if you're trying to change the governance model? Unfortunately, what appeals to some is to try to impose a governance model that's used for universities onto Florida colleges. And here's the difference. Universities attract students from all over the country, all over the world. And a governance model that looks across the state at those resources is appropriate. The college system was built to represent local, regional workforce needs. And the current governance model has trustees in place, which are appointed by our governor, who represent the counties that each college serves. And so that model, where I have, for example, trustees who are always asking me the extent to which we're meeting the needs in our region, that's a good model. That's the model you want, because I'm not training people then to leave our community and go somewhere else in the country, somewhere else in the world. So it's a model that works. It's a model that, in my opinion, if they tinker with that model or change that model, I would be very concerned that we would have people who don't understand the difference between governing a college and governing a university.
So if I'm hearing you properly, what you're saying is, number one, on the governance issue, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And number two, please, Florida legislature, give us the resources that we need to provide those workforces of the future, which is the bailiwick of the state college system.
Indeed, Tom. You're not funding the college system. You're funding the students who are coming through, who would become employees of Florida businesses.
A man who's watching the legislature very, very closely as we head into this final week, the president of Tallahassee Community College, Jim Murdaugh. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Lots of other bill action at the Capitol today. Let's get that from Bob Brooks with our sister operation, the Florida Channel.
Today is the 52nd day of session. The Senate Rules Committee voted unanimously in favor of Senate Bill 260, Students with Disabilities in Public Schools. This bill amends provisions relating to the seclusion and restraint of students with disabilities and revises school district policies relating to the restraint. It also requires continuing education and in-service training for teaching students with emotional or behavioral disabilities. Also in the Senate, Senate Bill 376, Workers' Compensation Benefits for First Responders. This bill revises the standards for determining compensability of PTSD under workers' compensation for first responders, which includes law enforcement officers, firefighters, emergency medical technicians, and paramedics. The bill passed rules and now heads to the full Senate. And committee substitute for Senate Bill 1134, with one of the longest bill titles this year, Department of Health Responsibilities Related to the Medical Use of Marijuana. This bill requires the Department of Health to allow qualified patients to change qualified doctors, and it also excludes the requirement that the department must license one applicant who is a member of the Black Farmers and Agricultural Association of Florida. The bill now moves to the full Senate for a vote, and the House approved a companion measure Thursday. In the House, committee substitute for House Bill 7007. This bill prohibits sexual harassment in all branches of state government and broadens the code of ethics to prohibit unwelcome sexual advances, requests for favors, or other verbal or physical conduct of a sexual nature. House Bill 7007 passed unanimously in the House and has been sent to the Senate for their approval. And finally, House Bill 1429, entitled Dismembership Abortion. This bill would subject a doctor or other provider who performs this type of abortion to a third-degree felony. It passed the full House Thursday. The Senate companion, Senate Bill 1890, has not had a committee hearing. Tomorrow, Friday, the House convenes at 10:30, the Senate at 1. From the Florida Channel, this is Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, the Florida House of Representatives has passed a bill that bans a particular medical procedure. Affiliates of Planned Parenthood, along with some lawmakers, believe the ban is really an effort to restrict abortion. Bill supporters, however, insist that's not the case. Devondra Alston tries to sort it all out.
Missy Waslowski with the Florida Alliance of Planned Parenthood says the bill would ban the most common and safest abortion procedure.
We believe that it would interfere with the doctor's ability to provide the safest care that they believe for their patients. And with the language in the bill being as it's written and kind of vague, a doctor would be unsure on how to safely and legally provide a woman who needs an abortion in the second trimester.
Affiliates of Planned Parenthood believe the bill has no medical basis and puts women's health at risk. Waslowski says the bill passed in several other states, but most are facing challenges in the courts.
It's very unfortunate that the House decided to take this bill up and put politics over health care, but we have seen this time and time again.
But supporters of the bill do not believe it will take away a woman's decision to abort a pregnancy. The sponsor of the bill, Republican Representative Aaron Grawl.
This is the middle. This bill acknowledges that a woman is having an abortion. It acknowledges that, and it says, let us remind ourselves of our humanity and make sure that we do not tear a child apart in the womb just because they cannot articulate their pain.
The Senate has yet to decide on a similar bill, and Waslowski does not believe the bill will move forward in that chamber.
The Senate bill has not been heard in a single committee of reference because we believe that the Senate recognizes that Floridians do not approve of interfering with women's personal private medical decisions. I mean, it's legislative session and it still has about another week left. But we are very optimistic at this point that the Senate has not yet heard this legislation.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Devondra Alston.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. We also thank Devondra Alston and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPRCapReport. And join us every weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition, protection, and stewardship of public and private conservation lands to protect Florida's waters, and to Everglades restoration and fish and wildlife conservation. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. And from Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys, Florida's advocates for seniors and persons with disabilities. Academy of Florida Elder Law Attorneys. More information about AFELA's policies at afela.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.